You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Romilla, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Today's episode is brought to you by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Today, I'll be continuing our exit interviews, breaking down each player's performance from last season and looking at what happens with them next season. Please make sure to go and check out yesterday's episode on Goran Dragic if you haven't already. And to help me out on today's show, once again, Jack Alfonso of the Miami Heat Beat Podcast. How are you doing, Jack?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Fantastic, man. So glad to have you back here. Yesterday's show, mostly positive, with a strong nostalgic theme, perhaps somewhat prematurely, but I think that was pretty definitive of the show. Today's show, probably not along the same lines, because we'll be talking about a fan favorite, Kendrick Nunn.
Yeah, fan favorite, I don't know if I'd classify him as that, but I'm sure some fans find him to be a favorite.
That's interesting, because I think it's so easy to break down his story into a very simple narrative of being undrafted. And of course, given Miami's history of reclamation projects and things of that sort, I think you could kind of fit into that narrative. Like Duncan, you can get into many reasons as to why Duncan is as beloved as he is amongst Heat fans. But I think Kendrick fits in there somewhat. And look, even as I mentioned, I think I mentioned to you yesterday that, you know, Pat Riley in his post game or postseason presser kept referring to K9. That was the term he used to refer to Kendrick Nunn. And he said it repeatedly when talking about the young core and why he's so optimistic about this team moving forward. So maybe a little shocking, you know, how respected he is in the franchise. They clearly see some upside there. You know, let's just get into it because it's worth a discussion. So if you have not listened to yesterday's podcast, basically we'll be breaking down the pros and cons and then getting to some major front office questions as far as what to do next with the Kendrick season and how he could possibly progress with the franchise. So as far as the positives are concerned, well, I guess it's just that. I mean, I feel like I have to be somewhat of a devil's advocate here because I know that you don't feel very strongly, positively, at least about Kendrick. But, you know, he was a success story, right, to some degree. I mean, you can get into all the kind of the discussion about his past and what happened with his arrest and things of that sort. And that makes it, I think to me, that certainly makes it very difficult to embrace Kendrick Nunn as much as I think we probably would, even from a media perspective. But I mean, at least from his encore, I'll try not to get into that. Because although I think it impacts my thought process, I'll try not to get into it so much. How do you feel about that? I mean, I hate to put you on the spot, but I'm just curious.
I honestly have not looked into it as deeply as I should. I'm aware of it, and it obviously paints or colors my perspective on him and like how willing I am to embrace him as a fan favorite. But I also think that that's just a whole, I guess, can of worms that would warrant a podcast episode unto itself.
And I did talk to you on that matter. I spoke to Giancarlo Navas about it. We had a whole episode because we saw Kendrick's name being used with increasing popularity. This is why I referred to him as a fan favorite earlier, because I think people were seeing his impact. And I was writing a feature on Bam Adebayo, I think mid-December, and Bam was having the start of what would be a fantastic season. And I asked Alvin Gentry about Bam, and he said, well, yeah, Bam's fine. But the guy you really should talk about is Kendrick Nunn. And that was kind of jarring to me, is how much, like, around league circles, Kendrick was viewed as, like, this up-and-coming player. And I think you looked at his production early on, the fact that, again, he wasn't drafted, although we know the reasons why he wasn't drafted now. You know, I guess that was that's the feel-good story everybody wants to gravitate towards, is that he's an undrafted player and he could go in there and he can score in bunches. And ultimately, you respect that kind of thing. I think at least from an NBA watching perspective, or even from a coach's perspective like Gentry's, you see him scoring and it's hard not to, I guess, embrace that kind of performance.
Yeah, and I mean, that's fine. I think the thing that causes me a little bit of discomfort, you kind of mentioned it, is like the easy slotting into a prefabricated narrative about, sure, you know, undrafted talent up and coming. Yeah. I think it's a little too easy and a little too like simplified and doesn't factor in, you know, obviously the reason why. It's not like he came out of nowhere. People knew he was talented and talent wasn't, you know, the thing holding him back. So when I hear, like, not to throw anyone under the bus, but like just commentators like a Jeff Van Gundy, a Charles Barkley, whoever says it, a lot of people say it's all around the league, just talk about him like in the same way they would talk about Duncan Robinson.
Yeah, Eric Reed does it all the time.
Yeah, it's just a little weird, not even passing judgment on the people doing that. It's just, you know, they're different stories. It's the reason Duncan Robinson was undrafted, the reason like other reclamation projects that the Heat have had in the past have been undrafted are a little different than the Kendrick Nunn story. Yeah. And that's not to say that I know what the narrative should be. You know, I'm not the authority on that, but I think maybe we could engage in a little more nuance, and that's a discussion worth having.
So let's try and shift from that then to talk about the positive impact, like seeing him on the court, regardless of all the things in his past that made it difficult to appreciate him perhaps fully. With, you know, you saw him, I don't think I was pretty negative about him following his summer league play, because I just didn't see a lot there to warrant him performing at a high level once the season started. And I mean, you go back to just think about it. It seems like it's almost a completely different year, completely different team. But I mean, he wasn't going to play. Like Dion Waiters was going to be the player there. Gorn was going to be the starter. It seemed like there was so much that was going to change. And Kendrick was just going to be a guy who could get occasional spot minutes on occasion. You know, Justice was going to be the starting point guard. There was so much to that roster early on. So there was no expectation for Kendrick Nunn coming in and playing, but he does. And he comes in and he takes the minutes away from Dion. He winds up getting inserted into the starting lineup. You know, obviously Goran takes the demotion to the bench, or at least accepts a bench role. And, you know, Nunn lives up to the hype to some degree, or maybe they even surpasses whatever expectations we might've had. He was aggressive. He looked to shoot well. I mean, he was a very good shooter earlier in the season, perhaps before defenses realized that he was a capable scorer and they started keying in on him, or perhaps there were other factors like injury and things of that sort. But at least early in the season, there was some hope there that he would be a pretty prolific scorer.
Yeah, he has a ton of talent and he definitely outperformed any expectations. You mentioned Summer League, and I mean, I was at Summer League this year and I have almost no memory of him because I feel like so much of the story was Hero and Robinson. And I do think if Tyler Hero wasn't on this team, we as a fan base would collectively be a lot more positive about Kendrick Nunn, just because I think it's so easy to see the future with a 20-year-old Hero, and a 25-year-old Nunn just kind of falls under that shadow. But no, definitely early in the season, and even at points in the playoffs, like I don't think he had a good playoffs, but like he has scoring talent, he has scoring ability. I think he's an NBA player. I think he can get into a rotation, especially when I think things were more uncertain about what the identity of this Heat team was early in the season. I thought he provided like a great scoring punch where at times I think they lacked that. And yeah, he was incredibly valuable at certain points of the season, and he was impressive too. I know I didn't expect anything from him.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think you bring up the identity thing, and it makes a lot of sense to reconsider and look back at Kendrick, and you say, you know what, maybe this is a very different team than the one we expect. I mean, even all the early talk about them being perhaps a lower seed in the Eastern Conference, and you know, who foresaw. Duncan Robinson being as valuable as he was, and nobody quite knew what to make of this roster. Dion, who was expected probably to be the team's leading scorer, second to Jimmy, wasn't even playing. I mean, there were a lot of different factors working in there, and all of a sudden this guy Kendrick comes in there, and it just kind of helps to say, you know what, I mean, maybe this is a different team, and maybe he can be one of the key players here. But then, of course, things start to taper off. You know, the scoring, though, I think the aggression, that's what always, I think when I think of Kendrick, I can't help but separate that. He is a go-to scorer. He is a first, he's looking to score first, second, and third. And that's probably something we'll talk about in the second segment, because it can be very detrimental to the success of the team. I didn't have any kind of specific stats or anything like that. Although, you know, you could look to his early shooting and it was much better than it was towards the end of the season. Aside from that, though, I mean, I can't really think of anything positive. Like, yes, he wasn't drafted, but there are reasons for that. And yes, he was not expected to take on a major role. But again, there are reasons for that. Deion's demotion and all the other things that kind of took into account the early part of the season. But overall, Kendrick's a fine player. I mean, I've talked to him in the locker room. He does come across somewhat humble and very grateful of this opportunity. He looks like he's absolutely a hard worker. Like, I don't think you can take that away from him. But and the franchise loves him. Like, I mean, the way that Spo talks about him, just, you know, one of those Chicago guys that he likes to use, and just the drive, the way he pushes himself and things of that sort, they really do tend to gravitate towards him. So for better or for worse, it looks like he's a part of this team moving forward. But let's get into, in the next segment, we'll talk a little bit more about the negatives and some of the cons from his season, because I think there's a fair share of those. We'll get into what his role for next season might be. You're listening to Locked On Heat. With an ever-increasing number of makes and models, it's impossible to stock all the parts you might need at a traditional chain storefront. So why endure pointless or intimidating questioning while the person behind the counter orders parts you're looking for on their computer, choosing only the brand their warehouse happens to carry? You've got computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Rockauto.com is a family-owned business. They've been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. You can choose from hundreds of manufacturers on their easy-to-use site, and you'll get everything you need with just a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Why would you spend more for the exact same parts at a chain store or at a car dealership? Rockauto.com's low prices are the same for everybody. So go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Then go to their How Did You Hear About a section and enter Locked On so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car or truck will ever need. That's rockauto.com. Stay up to date on the latest roster changes, rumors, and more by subscribing to the show on your favorite app to listen to podcasts, and always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. So here's the not so fun part, at least for Kendrick, some of the negatives. And I think there are a lot to get into. What really stands out to you the most about, as far as like the area that you think he needs to improve on the most?
Well, we kind of mentioned his scoring. And I was talking to some of the Heat beat guys about what we found impressive, because I was just trying to, you know, get as much positivity as possible. And Navas had mentioned that his turnover rate is pretty low. Mm-hmm. And then we were just talking about, well, that's because he doesn't really pass.
Right.
He's just kind of just a scorer. So yeah, that's my big thing with him, is it's not even necessarily a critique of him as a player, but I think so much of what this Heat team does and so much of what makes this offense great, that everybody's moving and the ball is moving freely, and he's such a ball stopper. Even when he's playing well, it kind of just, when the ball gets into his hands, you know, it's, he does something with it. And if he's not on as a scorer, it just kind of kills their offense. So I'd like to see him work a little better within the flow of the offense instead of just trying to get his, I guess.
Yeah, and that is a really good point. I mean, look, I kind of feel like we had the same discussion, well, not you and I, but as far as in context of Hassan Whiteside, like I remember a statistic that I looked up for last year's exit interview for Hassan, which, you know, again, a name that seems so alien and foreign at this point in time, but like the Heat was so successful during those games, those very, very, very few games where he had four assists or more. Like, I think it was like a ridiculous number. Like, they were like 10-4, 10-2. Like he was such, it was such a positive factor for Hassan when he was willing and able to share the ball. And, you know, again, so much to their detriment when he wasn't willing to do so. And I think you kind of get shades of that with Kendrick. It's like, he's looking to force himself, and you hope, kind of in the same way that I think Celtics fans look at Marcus Smart, you know, that you hope that first shot falls, because then maybe you can get a very good run out of him. I mean, that's the whole thing with Kendrick, is like he looks to score. If he gets that shot to fall, hopefully he'll be able to connect on a couple more. But otherwise, it's, you know, it could be a very difficult game for him because he's just going to continue to look to score and he doesn't share the ball as much as he does, or he should. And like, I'm thinking about like in the playoffs, there was a specific game there, I think against the Bucks, where he went in there and got some quick action and he was really good. He shared the ball. He was moving around. He wasn't looking to score. He played defense at a pretty high level and he was impressive in that regard. So that those things all seemed to be missing during the earlier part of the regular season when he was a much more important factor.
Yeah, I think he's one of those players where as soon as I see his first shot, I kind of know how his night's going to go. And if it falls short or if he kind of does something crazy, I'm of the mind that maybe I'm overreacting, but I just want Spo to pull him out of the game. But when he's, you know, he has his nights where he looks really good and he looks like he can be everything they need him to be. So I don't want to be purely negative about him. I just think consistently and at the age of 25, I worry that he kind of is what he is. And you compared him to Hassan a little bit. I'm not saying he's like Hassan. I'm not in the locker room every day. I don't know the personality of these guys, but I can only go by what you guys say and what the franchise says. Franchise seems to like none in a way that they didn't necessarily love Hassan Whiteside. But the thing with Hassan Whiteside was when they got him, he was already at a certain age where I felt like, you know, most of his game was developed and that there were certain things that he was just never going to get. And he was just kind of baked in as a player. And I worry about that with none about where he can go from here. Because he's, you know, he's not a 20-year-old. He's not that young. 25 is, you know, kind of the end of, nearing the end of your developmental period, I guess, traditionally.
Yeah. And I don't get the same sense, though, in that from Hassan, when he was performing very well during that time period when he was playing on a relatively cheap deal, and he was working towards that contract. He was being productive in the hopes of getting paid, and he got paid a lot of money, obviously. I don't get that sense from Kendrick. I feel like he still wants to continue to work and improve and things of that sort. I mean, obviously, like any NBA player, he wants to get paid. But I think I still get a feeling from him that he's not – I mean, he's confident. You can't be at this level without being confident. I just don't think he feels as entitled as Hassan did. Like Hassan felt like he should be the star of this team. He felt like he should have been the star of the Sacramento Kings when he got drafted there right below DeMarcus Cousins. I mean, that was, I mean, obviously ridiculous and what led to his downfall, but that was the whole feeling with him, is that he always saw himself as being of a much greater importance than he actually was. With Kendrick, I don't get that same sense, but there does seem to be a need for him to change and an unwillingness, at least thus far, for him to actually do it. So that is my concern, kind of similarly to what you're saying. Like maybe he's just at a point now where he's always been that guy expected to carry the brunt of the scoring load, and he can't deviate from that. And that's a huge concern moving forward.
Yeah. I guess it's kind of indicative of where I veer off from most people on my like analysis of what Hassan's problem was. I know attitude was a huge part of it, but I do think with a lot of the passing, it was just that he was never going to be that guy. He had an approach to the game that you know, he just wasn't capable of deviating from, and obviously attitude contributed to that. But I didn't know, like, even if he had a good attitude, even if he was like a certain type of player, like a Heat culture guy, quote unquote, whether he would develop that kind of passing or whether it was like a talent thing that you can't necessarily like will yourself into.
He didn't have much feel for it, like, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
He that's just kind of one of those things where some players have that like spatial awareness and have that like thing in their brain that like allows them to see the floor a certain way and anticipate things like that. And I think even if Hassan like really wanted to be a passer, even if he was a super unselfish player, I don't think he would have been a great passer just because of that. And I guess with none, like you say, the attitude's not the problem. The approach, you know, the mentality isn't the problem, but I do think, I don't think he's ever going to be a guy who can run your offense. And I don't think they need him to be. I think maybe maybe the leap isn't that big just to become a guy who can do what he does well in terms of like scoring when he can score, but also maybe just flow a little bit better within the offense and play a little bit better off ball and share a little bit better. I don't know how big the leap that would require from like where he is now to where he needs to be, but you know, maybe the Heat feel it's very teachable and very, you know, within his capability.
Yeah. And I get that same sense on the defensive end too, which we haven't even got into, but I mean, clearly he has the physical tools to be a solid defender, like the size, the strength, the speed. I was kind of somewhat curious that they felt he could match up with Rajon Rondo in the NBA finals during the few minutes that he did get some playing time there. And I think they have some hope that he can turn into a solid defender, but it's just his unwillingness to go over screens. That seems, I know that seems teachable to me. I think there are huge issues there. He's again, you look at him clearly from a physicality, athleticism perspective, he can be a good defender, just seems to lack the interest or understanding of how to go about it. I don't know. I'd say he's willing. Just you get the sense from him, though, that there's something missing as far as why he's not a better defender. Like he has to be fully engaged on that end. And maybe that's the whole thing, is that maybe he can only be one dimensional in that sense. Like it's like I'm looking to score first and foremost. And so the defensive part of my game has to suffer somewhat. Do you get that same feeling? Because, I mean, I at least in watching him, I kind of feel like he's capable of being a good defender, and we've seen occasional moments where he can defend at a high level, but then that is just so far and few between that he's such a negative force out there, and you know that he's going to get attacked from beyond the perimeter. I mean, just because he's so, again, he can't contend with you on from a physical perspective. He does not stay with you over screens and things of that sort, and he can get exposed pretty badly.
I mean, I think of it in terms of I guess more of a broader philosophical debate about player development. I remember when the Heat drafted Justice Winslow, there was a huge conversation about like him versus Devin Booker in terms of like, oh, well, defense is more teachable and offense is less teachable. And that's just kind of this weird thing where I don't really know where I come down on it. I'm not a coach. I'm also not a player. So I don't really know what skills are more teachable and what skills are less teachable. But with defense, I think the assumption by like most people is that it's purely an effort thing, that it's eminently teachable, that if you have the will, you can do it. My worry with Nunn is that he just takes horrible angles. Yeah. So, I mean, like we talked about earlier about like this kind of like stage aware or like this court awareness.
Yeah.
I worry that that's not that teachable and that some players have like, you know, a kind of mind for the geometry of the game. And if you don't have that kind of mind, there's like a cap on how good of a defender you can be. And I remember in the last episode when we talked about Goran and his defensive limitations, I said, I don't really get mad about it because he plays smart and he plays hard.
Right.
And it's almost the complete opposite with Nunn, is that he has, you know, he should be a better defender than Goran just physically. But he doesn't always play hard and he doesn't play smart on that end. And it's a philosophical debate about player development, whether those things are teachable, whether he can, learn to take better angles and just, approach that side of the floor in a smarter way, and whether he can, you know, as he takes a backseat on offense more, as he like works more within the offense, maybe he's preserving some energy and can play better on defense. I would trust Spo on how he feels about that, because I mean, I feel like I'm aware of his limitations, but I don't know how correctable they are.
Yeah, Spo, like, I mean, I was so surprised at the change to the lineup, because it seemed like what Spoelstra was purposely blinding himself to all of Nunn's weaknesses because he did like that grit and tenacity and all those other things. And so like we kept seeing all the mistakes playing out in real time, and yet Spoelstra would continue to go back to him and continue to incorporate him in the lineups and not make those changes. And it was just, it was kind of jarring. I don't know if Spo maybe he, I don't know. He might just want to embrace the positives of Kendrick's game and not look at the negatives. But I think if anything, the bubble did show that maybe he was a lot more aware than we had previously given him credit for. But, you know, let's talk about that in the next segment, because we'll have to look at it from a front office perspective. This is an exit interview, so we'll play the role of the general manager here and talk to Kendrick as we would if we were Pat Riley, and offer some suggestions and questions about what he should do during the offseason. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Just a reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskHelloHeat. So, Jack, we've been talking about the pros and cons of Kendrick Nunn's games. And now, as GM, what would your suggestion be to Kendrick so that he could continue to take a leap moving forward?
I just want to know what he brings to the table when his jump shot is falling short. When the shot's not falling, why should you get minutes? Like, which is the big question for him his entire season this year was when his shot's not falling, he's not worth having on the floor. He's a giant liability, and he has to be pretty good at scoring just to stay on the floor. And I don't think that fits with what the Heat do. So if he's going to be a long-term rotation player on this Heat team, he has to be able to work when he's not scoring, because he's not a great enough scorer for that to be his only skill.
So I don't know, like from a coaching perspective, you know, the onus is on Spoelstra to try and bring that aspect out of him. But also from a Kendrick side of things, like what is it that he needs to do in order to kind of have that more well-rounded approach to the game? Like, that's the thing is, like, again, we talked about it before. He's always had this mentality. Is he willing to make those kinds of changes? And I don't know. And I think it kind of leads to a bigger question then also is whether or not you view Kendrick Nunn as part of this team moving forward. I mean, obviously everything has changed so quickly between, you know, the rise of Tyler Hero, Bam Adebayo, and of course, Jimmy playing as well as he does. Now what's Kendrick's role going to be? I mean, how does he kind of fit into this team moving forward? And I don't know that there's a clear answer to that. Do you have any kind of perspective on it that I might not?
Personally, I'm pessimistic on his ability to fit within what this team does. I think they really found their identity in the bubble, and they found their identity specifically when they took him out of the lineup.
Yeah.
I know we talked about Goran yesterday about how, you know, he's maybe not going to be the same player he was, and that leaves questions for their point guard rotation. We saw it in the playoffs that they had to play Nunn simply because they did not have another point guard. I think Nunn's future kind of hinges on, I guess, Goran's future, on what you see from Tyler Hero, his ability to play within the point guard role going forward. And then I think it kind of depends on who they draft, if they use their draft pick at all, or if they maybe get somebody in free agency or through a little trade or whatever. Personally, I'm not a draft expert right now, but I'm a big fan of Kira Lewis Jr. I think he's like a really like nice looking fast point guard who could do like really great things for the Heat. And if they pick him at 20 and they keep him, I mean, I don't see any reason why Nunn could continue to be on this team. I think his presence on this team going forward purely hinges on the depth or lack thereof of their point guard rotation.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I just, there's so little trade value too. Like, I mean, even I was talking to some other media folks, one who covers the Bulls, and I asked him what, you know, Kendrick's trade value would be in a theoretical deal of like a sign and trade for Derrick Jones Jr., who's a free agent. Like, they obviously covet Derrick Jones Jr. I think a lot of teams, or at least a notable handful, covet Derrick Jones Jr. And then if you're going to include Kendrick in a trade package along with Derrick, that sours things almost 100% of the time. And that was interesting to me, is how little value he's perceived as having. And I think, again, from the fan perspective, and I've gotten some crap about it online and via Twitter and via email and things of that sort, like, well, I don't respect none as much. And, you know, that's the strange part of this, is that as prolific a scorer as he was earlier in the season, I think the bubble kind of exposed him, and you realize now that there's not much value to what he does if he's not scoring at a high level. And one of my the bones that I've been picking on lately is that, you know, everybody kept looking at the COVID diagnosis as the reason why he was struggling, and that wasn't the case. That was before COVID was a factor here in the United States. Like, he struggled to shoot the ball in March, you know, that was before he was diagnosed with anything. And I just, that's, he was injured. And I know there was a nagging injury around the All-Star break and everything else, but at the same time, I don't know that he'll ever get back into form. And that's a big concern of mine, is whether or not he's ever going to return to the kind of prolific scoring that we saw early on, and whether or not he has that confidence moving forward. I do think that there is, as much as he is a guy who jacks up his shot with every opportunity, he also seems like maybe confidence might be a factor for him. So I don't know what to do with him moving forward. Cause, like, yeah, you're right, it all depends on Goran's health. I think they'll draft a guard because Goran's aging, because they're not sure that they can bring somebody in via free agency. They're not going to add another player now, looking ahead to 2021. So why not get somebody somewhat cheaply? And that's why you use the draft, you know, but basing this assumption on Riley's comments at that presser, you know, he seems like he's pretty intent on keeping their stockpile of draft picks. And he seems pretty high on, his expression was that the cupboard is more full than ever as far as draft picks is concerned. And I think he's going to continue to look to build the team with the drafts and get another complimentary player. If I had to guess, well, here, I'll pose the question to you. If you had to guess right now, regardless of the draft, and assuming that Goran, if he's available, he's probably coming off the bench, is Kendrick in the starting lineup next year?
I don't think so. I can't see this team, which was just in the finals, particularly after taking him out of the starting lineup, like as a consequence of him being removed from the rotation, entering next season with him in the starting lineup. I just couldn't imagine them doing that. It would be such a step back. I do think they draft a guard or try to find something, or I think Hero plays the point guard role, maybe, yeah, you know, not as the floor general, but as a, you know, kind of a de facto off ball point guard with Bam and others controlling the offense more. I just cannot imagine them putting out a rotation next season where a guy who kind of kills their motion offense is the starter. But also, clearly, the coaching staff and the front office is way more optimistic about his future than I am. Yeah. So I don't know.
No, I'd have to agree with you. I mean, Riley also does tend to be somewhat hands-off and allowing Spo the leeway to make those decisions as far as the rotations and everything else is concerned. I mean, he can only build a team as much as he possibly can, and then kind of let Spo make those choices on a daily basis. And yeah, he rode with Kendrick Nunn for as long as he possibly could during the regular season. And then when it was time to make a real push for title contention, he was painfully aware that he could not play Nunn for as long as he did. So that was a little surprising, but I think that's the future also. I just don't see a world where Kendrick plays a lot. Like, he'd have to take such a substantial leap as a playmaker. And we saw that leap from Tyler Hero. Like, there's already a young player with a lot more upside and a lot more consistency as a shooter already on the floor, who already took a leap as a playmaker and willing passer. And if that's the case, why not go with him as your starting guard? So my guess right now would be Tyler's in the starting lineup next year with Kendrick and or whoever they draft, along with Goran coming off the bench, just to add to that depth. And you know, it's interestingly enough that they couldn't send Nunn to the G League. I'm not sure if it's part of the contract or anything like that, or he already spent his time with the G League for Santa Cruz. But at the same time, I feel like he could have gone some more experience there, or maybe it would have been pointless. You know, as we've talked about before, it just might be so thoroughly ingrained that he's not capable or willing to make the change at this point. So we'll see what happens. It was fun while it lasted. It was a great couple of months there earlier in the season when he was providing a nice burst of offense. And of course, that tapered off later on. And we'll see what the future lies, what the future holds for Kendrick Nunn next season. But now is a part of our show where we give you the opportunity to compare Kendrick Nunn to one of your favorite Bob Dylan songs.
Yeah, I kind of vacillated on this. One of my early thoughts was to go from something from his first album, a cover song called You're No Good. But I thought that was a little too mean and unfair to him.
Yeah,
because I think he is a good player. I think he has a future in the NBA. I just don't think it's with Miami because of what Miami does and what their offensive identity is. So I chose another song, a great song, a classic song from Blonde on Blonde. It's Most Likely You Go Your Way and I'll Go Mine. It's a little self-explanatory. I just think as good as the things he does are, like, as I think he's a nice scorer. I think he has a future in the NBA. I don't think he's done developing. Clearly, if they like him in that locker room, he's doing something right. If they like him and they think he's a hard worker, like, he can have a future in the NBA. I just think Miami thrives in this offense that is just constantly moving, and everybody has this incredible court awareness on both ends of the floor. And everything hinges on that. And that's why they're so able to play above their talent level. And I worry that he'll never be able to fit in with that completely.
Yeah.
So, you know, you talked about his trade value not being that high. Hopefully he can raise it before the deadline next season so they can get something for him, or, you know, just, you know, be able to get something out of that asset. But I mean, I guess no matter what happens, I just don't see him having a future with this Heat team as it's currently constituted and with the kind of team Spoelstra likes to put on the floor. So yeah, maybe he's on another team next year.
All fair. And I'm trying to even think about it as you're talking about this. It makes total sense. And yet I can't find a team where he would help. Like, what, especially in today's NBA, when you're looking at playmaking bigs being the future of the league, and then all of a sudden you've got a guy who is a throwback to the 80s as far as being a gunner, a guy who just looks for his shot first and last. I don't know where he fits in. Like, on a young developing team, I mean, why would you want him when you're sacrificing the development of other players on your roster? I mean, he's not good enough to be your go-to guy. He's not bad enough to just stash on the bench permanently. And I just don't see what his future is. To me, honestly, like, his best bet is probably to be an electrifying force overseas. And I hate saying that because it feels dismissive of a guy who's worked to this point to get here. But I don't see how he fits into the NBA. It's almost better for him to kind of learn there in China or Europe somehow and kind of let him figure it out and still have those games where he could go off for 30 to 40 points and you know, be productive and feel good about himself and get paid. Let's be honest. I mean, if he can go and learn and get that worldly experience and get paid in the process, why not go for it? I don't know. I'm not as optimistic as you are about his future in the NBA because I just can't see a fit the way he currently plays. Like, yeah, he's a burst of energy, but I mean, we've seen guys like that, I mean, come and go throughout the history of the league. I just don't know that he's going to be, he is liked in that locker room. He's a good player, a good person, perhaps, you know, but at the same time, I just don't know that he's a guy that you can share the court with very easily. And if that's the case, then why keep him on an NBA roster?
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I think it's kind of a question. He'll have to grow at least a little more to establish himself as a mainstay in the NBA. I don't think it's an insult to his talent to say that he could thrive overseas. You know, overseas ball is pretty competitive.
NBA guys see it that way.
Yeah, I think, I guess I'm a little optimistic that, I don't know, there are a lot of bad players in the league. I think he's better than a lot of them. And I think if he grows a little bit, which if he's the hard worker that people believe he is, I mean, I have no reason to doubt that. I think he'll grow a little bit. He's 25, but also he's only 25. Like, he could have a little more growing to do. I think he could be like a bench scoring option for a team that I guess needs a bench scoring option. I don't know if he would thrive in that role. Have a hard time thinking of a team that would like really need that. I'm not comparing him to Lou Williams, but like,
well, that was the hope. Like, that was the hope with Golden State when they were bringing him up through the G League that way, was that they saw that roster with Steph and Clay and everything else. And they're like, well, what do we need most? It's a guy who can come in here, provide some instant offense, because, you know, in case there's an injury or anything like that, he could just come in and help a weak bench because they have such a strong starting lineup. And that was the hope. And of course, Miami was able to quote unquote steal him from the Warriors, but they kind of saw him along that same model as a Lou Williams. And I just don't know that that's realistic either.
Yeah. Lou Williams is incredibly talented. Just one of the most unique scorers in recent NBA history. So it's kind of unfair to compare anybody to that guy. But I do think, you know, if his jump shot gets a little more consistent, if he just gets a little more consistent as a scorer, and maybe he just improves a tiny bit in the other areas, I do think on a team that doesn't rely so much on constant motion, he could, you know, kind of fill up the box score as like an eighth man off the bench.
We'll see what happens. I'm glad you brought, I thought I'd be the more optimistic one, and you kind of flipped around there and wound up being much more positive about Kendrick's growth, if anything else. And maybe not so positive about his last season's performance, but certainly about his future in the NBA. So thank you so much for bringing a different perspective than I had previously envisioned. That's Jack Alfonso. You can follow him on Twitter at Alfonso Hoops. I'll be continuing to bring you the latest rumors and news around the NBA, and of course, looking ahead to the NBA draft and continuing our series on exit interviews. If you want to stay up to date, what better way to do that than by subscribing and following this podcast to get the latest episodes as soon as they're out. I'm David Ramil, signing off and thanking you as always for your support.